On September 11th, 2001, time was altered for this nation when 19 terrorists from Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network hijacked 4 planes and on a suicide mission, 2 crashed into the World Trade Center in New York City, destroying them. 1 crashed into the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and the destination of the 4th was thwarted when passengers wrested control of the plane from the hijackers, and it crashed into a cornfield in Pennsylvania. By the end of the day, almost 3,000 people had lost their lives. The toll of heartbreak has been immeasurable. The nation was put on alert, and President George Bush waged a war against terrorism. We now measure time, referring to before September 11th and after September 11th. There has been a loss almost of innocence. Now there is a great deal of security alert for many of the events that we go to. Concord mourns the loss of Al Filipov, age 70, who was on Flight 11 from Boston to Los Angeles, the first plane to crash into the World Trade Center. His wife, Loretta, born in 1936, is being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's oral history program on the impact of September 11. The interview is taking place at her home at 40 Minot Road on June 18, 2002. Flight 11 from Boston to Los Angeles on American Airlines was a flight that Al had often taken.
Al took Flight 11 all the time. He used to sit in his backyard, see it going overhead and say, "That's my plane. It's Flight 11," or "Here comes my plane home." Mm-hmm. So it was his flight. He had other choices that morning, but on September 10th, he finalized his reservations and decided to go with his usual flight, and that way he could sit in the Admiral's Club and do all the things he always did.
That was an early morning flight.
Very early. That allowed him to travel that day and still get some work in when he got to California.
So it's something that he would leave at 5 o'clock, 5:30, 4.
That's correct. He left about 5:15, 5:30 that morning, and at 7 o'clock he called me from the Admiral's Club to say he was there. I, however, was in the shower, so I didn't talk to him. I just had his message. But I knew he got to the Logan all right.
And it was a beautiful September Tuesday morning, and actually you always loved September, and you were getting ready for a number of things.
September was our month. The 14th would have been our 44th wedding anniversary. The 23rd is the birthday of our oldest son, Alan. The 26th, the day we had the memorial service, is my birthday. And October 12th is David's birthday. Everything good happened in September, and those crisp, cool autumn days with the blue sky were the best. We often went to the beach in September. It was the most favorite thing to do. we were having, we were planning on some travel, some golf, and planning to do a lot of things when he came back that Friday morning.
You were celebrating your 44th anniversary?
Our 44th wedding anniversary, yes.
And you had plans to
go to? For 2 days, we were going to do the golf thing, start in the morning, get the hat, have the breakfast, do the golf, look at the pictures, and we're going to do that for 2 days, and then a couple of days later, we were heading to Hawaii for 10 days.
And so you were quite busy preparing
Very busy preparing for all this. Al said to me that morning, as he always did, "Would you like to come? Why don't you come?" And I said, no, I've got a lot to do. It's only 3 days. You've got your things, and I'll be waiting for you when you come back. So I was busy running around, sending birthday cards, writing notes, getting addresses, planning something I had to do at church with a friend, and busier than ever when I watched the Good Morning America show and saw the tower on fire and started to make some phone calls to see what was happening out there and is everyone looking. I didn't have anybody to tell it to, so I called church, I called my son, I called a friend.
It was something that you didn't necessarily connect with.
Never. We thought it was a small plane, an accident, the thought of terrorists using an airplane as a human bomb, as a bomb, was the farthest thing from my mind. Afterwards, I realized that this should not have been a surprise, because there were lists, there were terrorists, and there were other warnings that something like this could happen. But that day, we were all caught unaware.
What was the nature of Al's flight? What kind of work did he do?
Al was a consultant, and he was an engineering consultant. He had an expertise in accelerometers, and he was minding his business after having consulted for 6 years for a company that he had worked for here and then moved out to the West Coast, sitting here minding his business, doing a little golf, a little computer work, when this company called and asked if he'd help out. And they met, they talked, they liked each other, and he said sure. He did a lot of work at home. He got along well with them. They had phone conferences every Friday. He went out on occasion, and this was to be a quick trip. I think they were a little anxious because he was planning a trip and he'd be away for a while, so they thought, if you could just come out before you leave so that we could, you know, just have your expertise for that little bit and then go, and then when you come back, you can come back and we'll be together more. Same as I thought. And he was really going out to, quote, hold their hands for a few days. I often wonder, I don't live my life by this, but if we had some warnings, if someone said, hey, like we have now, don't go to the malls, don't do this, don't do that, if we had some warning, would he have opted to say, well, forget this for 3 days, I'm not going to take a chance? I don't know that. I don't know the answer. And I don't think about it all that often.
Well, he was obviously a talented man. He had much to offer. He was an electrical engineer.
Engineer, very talented, lots to offer. And they came to visit me in March looking for some circuit designs, because they had gotten a contract based on his circuit design and didn't have it. I found it somewhere in our pile, and even though they had hired two engineers and they were working hard, they couldn't figure it out, and they missed him very much, as do we all.
he was not only talented, but extremely kind, and people loved him. He reached out to people very easily.
Al was kind and peaceful and humorous and had a great wit. And when he traveled, it didn't matter if he was talking to the parking attendant who parked the car, the hotel manager, the CEO of the company, everybody was treated the same way. And all of those people phoned or wrote to me, every one of them.
Isn't that beautiful? How did you find out that this plane was his plane that crashed?
I talked to my son Jeff that morning because he works in Boston in a tower, and I was saying, do you have access to a TV, because there's something going on that doesn't look right. And he called me back, and as we were talking, people in the background were feeding him information, and he said, Mom, they're saying it was a hijacked plane from Boston. And I said, oh, that can't be. He said, well, when did Dad leave? I said, hours ago. This is, you know, he certainly, that wasn't his plane. And he said, Mom, it was flight 11. I'm coming home. Then he hung up the phone and came home. I listened a little more to the news. I called my minister,
John Lombard.
I think I had to have someone call him. I think the line was busy. I called a friend. I called my son Alan in Houston and left a message on his cell phone to tell him that he needed to call me because Dad was on flight 11. I couldn't reach David in Moscow, and I emailed that Dad was on flight 11.
David is the Globe reporter.
David is the journalist in Moscow for the Boston Globe.
The difficulty of comprehending the enormity of that day. Now, your son, Jeff, was very helpful even in taking the car that he drove, and
Jeff got home, and he and Johanna, we call her Honey, his then girlfriend, his now wife, sat here and thought about things they could do, and they even talked about going to New York and looking for Dad in case he was wandering around with amnesia. How naive we all were.
Right.
And we all sat in front of the TV, and as soon as John Lombard saw the names across the screen and saw what American was saying and where people could go, and quite frankly, I don't remember any of that, but John saw it. He and some friends that were here were able to write it down, and someone took Jeff and Hani into the airport where they visited with American Airlines, with the FBI, and were able to pick up the car. And the interesting thing about that is hours later, all the cars from that area were towed, and some not in a good manner. So we often joke about us getting our car sooner, because I said, go make sure you get the car and don't pay the toll, don't pay the fee, don't pay the overnight fee.
All travel would, of course, cease to be. Al was very active, loved gardening and a whole variety of pursuits that we remember him for.
Well, as we sit here, there are two young girls doing the weeding. I have lawn care, grass care, weed care, plumbers, accountants, all those things that Al did. Plus, I don't do the fun things that I did, not with him. Al loved just about everything he did. If he knew that it was going to be a good year for the stars and we were going to see things, he got a telescope and we'd go out and we'd find a place, maybe Punkatasset Hill, where it was quiet at 3 or 4 in the morning and look at a certain star or the moon. And people would say, what did you do yesterday? Well, at 4 in the morning I was on Punkatasset Hill with Al. Well, I'm not going to do anything like that now. It's those spontaneous little things. Al was interested in just about everything and good at a lot of things.
It was beautiful summer proceeding.
We had a wonderful summer. We were lucky to have our then 5.5-year-old grandson. And he
named after Al.
Named after Al. His name is Alexander Michael Filipov, but it's still Alexander M. And he likes that too. He likes that his name is like his grandpa's. And they did a lot of gardening together. They planted potatoes when Alex first came. And Al did that by taking potatoes from our bin and putting them out, and then he picked them. And the picture we have here is of Alex with his grandpa picking potatoes. And grandpa's saying, you know, we're going to eat these tonight. And Alex is probably wishing he didn't have to, but he did. And that was August, just before Alex left, on August 13th or 14th.
That's a beautiful picture. He's looking up at his grandfather with his great awe. And he lives in Russia and visits here.
He does,
here.
And mm-hmm. He visits. He was here for a while in the fall, and he's coming again soon, for July.
And your son, David, the journalist for the Globe, wrote about his father, and he went into Afghanistan.
David had to go to Afghanistan and cover the war because he's based in Russia and that's close, so he went to all the stands. And at this particular time, they asked him to do a story about him and his dad and his feelings, something David rarely does. He rarely talks about himself, but this particular time he did. He said it wasn't an easy story to write, but it also is the kind of thing that helped him, because he wasn't with us all the time.
He, in a sense, in grieving for his father, he goes into a land of great loss and destruction. You were very cognizant of there was enough loss of human life. You did not want to see more lives lost in waging an indiscriminate war.
That's correct, and I told that to the powers that be. Days after September 11th, my two senators, Senator Kennedy and Senator Kerry, called me, as did Congressman Marty Meehan. They all expressed their condolences, and they all asked what they could do for me at this particular time. I don't know how I had the clarity of mind to say what I did, but I did. And I asked them to please go to Washington and work together and try to fix the problem that we have right here in our country, where our agencies are not working properly. They're not talking to one another, that we had a lot of warnings, we should have paid more attention, that I think this could have been stopped in some way, but let's at least stop it in the future, and let's not go to war. There's enough lives are lost, and you don't you're not going to help by killing other people, innocent people, who didn't do anything, just to go look after a bearded man in a cave. They're never going to get him. There'll always be terrorists and Al-Qaeda as long as somebody could give them money. They all agreed with me. They said they'd do what they can. Senator Kerry said this is a warring administration. The others agreed that was the right way. They thought I was very brave to think that way. Well, I don't think it was brave. I realized after that, when we all went to talk to John Lombard about how our service would be, that my family all felt the same way. This is not what Dad would want. And in talking with other people of 9/11, and I've talked to a lot, I never got the impression that was what any of them wanted.
Mm-hmm.
A war on terrorism was not how they saw, it's not what they saw, not what they could see happening. They didn't feel that their loved ones dying should represent this war and continuing war and going and getting him and looking for more war. I feel very strongly about that, and I have since written a letter to my senators and congressmen telling them how I felt once again and what I felt my family's beliefs were about all of this. I asked Congressman Meehan to send it on to the Senate Investigation Committee, to the White House, and to the other senators, and hopefully he did. I have a copy of a letter from Senator Kerry.
You actually weren't invited. Congressman Meehan had the surviving families come to his home?
He has had many gatherings, and he's offered many, many things from September on. I haven't been always able to attend everything, but I did what I could. He's been a wonderful, wonderful man to all the families. I believe in his district alone there are 28. However, the last meeting I went to on April 11th, I believe he had all of Massachusetts there. He had quite a few people. Senator Kennedy has been most helpful in gathering people, having his aides put us in touch with whatever we needed, whether it was Social Security benefits, mental health. He was there, and his aides were helpful, so helpful. And they always knew who you were and remembered that they spoke to you. And I think these two men have been exceptional and always have been, but more so now.
The 9/11 Fund, is that something that's helpful or not?
The 9/11 Fund that Congress appropriated provided, after they put a cap on the airlines, provided you didn't sue the airlines, the way I see it. I'm not sure the status of it, but I haven't met anyone who has received any money. Certainly no one has received $1.8 million, which I think is the median that they're talking about now. No one I know has received any money from that fund.
So that hasn't.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that. It was never a priority.
Right.
But
right.
I certainly am never signing anything that says it's okay. What happened was okay. Thank you. I'll take the money. I don't feel.
I understand.
Yeah.
You decided to have the service for him September 26th.
Mm-hmm.
No words can describe the failing, but the outpouring of remembrance and affection for him made for a very crowded church.
It was very crowded. Everyone came. There were people that I hadn't seen in 40 years. There were people he worked with when he first came here, people from companies. One of my sons said, one of the men said, your father had to fire me, but I still loved him. There were so many different companies, so many people. One of my son's college roommates said he had to park far away, and as he was walking towards the church, someone said to someone else, "What's going on?" And they said, "Well, they're having a service for Al Filipov." And the man said, "Wait for me, let me get a jacket." And he came, and my son's friend was in awe. I was in awe. We had a reception line to receive visitors 2 weeks before, or the week before, 10 days before, just to let people know we were surviving and for those who needed to see us. And it was 3.5 hours long, so we thought, well, we won't need to have a reception line here, and we were in another line for 3.5 hours. It was a great tribute, and I wished I could have told Al, all these people came for you, and he would have said, no, they came because of you.
Well, he and you, you know, represent the best of humanity. And
I think so.
In remembrance of Al, there is a forum that is being set up through the Trinitarian Congregational Church. Can you describe that?
I can tell you what I know. In talking, a lot of people have wanted to do a lot of things, and the diaconate, of which he was a member for many, many years, our church, he was on so many committees and such an enormous figure in the church, so everyone wanted to do something, and the diaconate had a beautiful tray imprinted with his name, and I'm having a granite bench made so that people could go and sit there and look at the flowers, look at the trees, eat their lunch, and maybe remember Al. And John Lombard and I got talking with a few other people, and I said, but we need to do something living, and he felt the same way. And he and I came up with this forum and started to think about the way we wanted Al perceived and the way our service was. And so we started calling it Peace and Justice. And it's just, the idea is that people could see there are other ways to do things. We don't have to hate everyone. Perhaps we could learn a little about why people are the way they are, why they have a different religion and hate us. What is it we do wrong? I don't know if this particular forum and this speaker will address that, but and those issues, but I think at least by having peace and justice, it's a way of saying, let's look at our alternatives and let's empower as many people as we can to go on and continue good work instead of war.
Well, that's a good way to remember.
And so we hope we've got someone lined up for this year. We're funding it, and we're hoping that it will continue for a long, long time, as long as people are interested and care.
So this year's speaker is Paul Loeb?
This year's speaker is Paul Loeb. He's the author of a book called Soul of a Citizen. It's a powerful book, and just his biography alone tells you that people can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And that will be the weekend of September 14th?
It will be September 14th and September 15th. Whenever we have these, it will always be the closest date to September 11th.
And I just found out that John Lombard will be having the September 11th surface.
He will. He will. He. I found that out the other day that on September 11th he'll have quiet, reflective music with a wonderful musician named Tim Janis. The flowers will be from the Philippoff family. And I don't know if we'll be there, but we're all going to be together on that day. And where we'll be, I don't know, but there is going to be a nice service for the community on September 11th. And then we'll have September 14th and 15th. And hopefully it will be attended by a large number of people.
It will. It definitely will. In contrast, you know, I picked up the Globe this morning, and your son, David, wrote about how Russia's scattered nuclear weapons are a temptation for terrorists. So it was an extensive article, and there has to be another way.
There has to be another way. Going to Afghanistan, going to Georgia, and seeing the destruction and the no-win situation isn't pleasant. It's his job, but it isn't going to fix the problem.
Here that the CIA was not talking to or sharing information with the FBI, and similarly the INS, the Immigration Service, was not communicating, so...
It seems to be their way, and it seems to be the way they've been, but I think they can change, and I think this is a perfect opportunity to make those changes. And maybe I won't see it in my lifetime, but start. And that's all I'm asking them to do, is start to make those changes. Train people in languages, update the computers, have lists that are shared. You should be able to put something in the computer and everybody can read it. And then do it. There is an example of making a difference. If everybody sits on their duff and keeps quiet and says, well, I got to protect my longevity in this job. So he's got the job, but the world is in terror. And that's called making a difference.
Exactly. The Trinitarian Congregational Church has been a source not only of comfort, but of sociability for you. And it meant a lot for Al.
I don't think I could ever move from this town. We'd been members of that church for over 40 years. And, you know, when we used to think about moving anywhere, and as an engineer, you always get offers when you're young. Do you want to come here? Do you want to come there? And Al once said, you know, this is such a good place, and we have our wonderful church. If anything ever happened, like you lose a job or something, you know they'll take care of you. Well, something awful happened, and they took wonderful care of me. And they still are, and they still do. They take care. They brought food. But they're caring, they're loving. I could go down and sit there, just sit in the parlor, just visit with the secretary, and feel better. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. I'm very, very fortunate. And this town, too. People stop me in town and talk to me. I don't think it's because it's a, oh, this is something weird we've got to talk about. I think it's because they care. Everyone
right,
cares.
Right.
That's what I found out. Everyone cares.
The sense of community.
It's a wonderful sense of community. Even though we have discussions and arguments about how much the taxes should be, it's a wonderful sense of community. And no, I couldn't have survived without my church.
Well, thank you.